You're listening to the Visually Stunning Movie Podcast, the place to come for movie reviews, along with some extra fun talk about movie-related topics like box office and awards. You can find us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and basically any place else you can find podcasts. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter for even more content. If you like what we do, feel free to share us with your friends, like and leave feedback wherever you listen to us, and let us know what you think. Now, let's get on with the show.
Ryan, new movie, horror movie. We like horror movies, right? We like good horror.
I have the reputation for it, apparently.
We like good horror movies. How about that? Big release this week, from the Jordan Peele label, but not a Jordan Peele film.
Yeah, he co-wrote, but he didn't direct.
No, and he produced. Candyman, which if you ever watched the original back in the day, the original was pretty freaky and frightening and dark and terrible. A solid piece of work.
Well, but, you know, and you have to consider, I mean, it's coming from Clive Barker, a short story by Clive Barker. And Clive Barker, who's probably more famous for the Hellraiser being the inspiration for a lot of, you know, he did the first film. But he's a master of the grotesque, I think is probably the best way to put it. So he is able to capture these images that on their own, they don't need to necessarily even do anything. They're pretty frightening just to look at. So, you know, a man with a hook, which is a classic urban legend. But of course, in Clive Barker's world, urban legends are real. So that's kind of the basis of this.
Yeah. So there were a couple of sequels to the original,
yeah.
But I actually never watched them because I was like, why? Why would I want to do that to myself? But this one is about an artist who, unbeknownst to him, grew up with a history entwined with the Candyman legend. But we also get this expansion of the Candyman mythos, which I thought was awesome.
You can look at this film in two ways. It's either a slasher horror movie,
right,
that really has nothing to say, if you want to take it that way, or it's a horror film that has a whole lot to say.
Well, it depends on how you want to watch it.
Yeah,
you are correct.
Yeah, I mean, so on one hand, it offers you the bloody kills. It has the, you know, the kind of the traditional slasher stuff, but underneath it, yeah, I mean, and part of the expansion of Candyman is it's no longer kind of the, it's just not one person. It's not just the Tony Todd famous character.
Right.
It's been expanded to various levels of trauma and how they pile up on each other. So yeah, Candyman is no longer just this singular being. He's kind of this shared experience.
Yeah. It's a cultural boogeyman as opposed to a very specific
moment.
Yeah. So, and it takes place in the Cabrini Green area, which has become gentrified since the first film.
At least parts of it have.
Parts of it are still there. The row houses, I think, are the big part. Not necessarily the towers, but the row houses are still there, and where a lot of stuff happened. And we get a lot of backstory if you want the social commentary about the gentrification and black genocide. And I mean, you can go all kinds of ways. It's all in there. It's all valid. And then you get to the end and you find out what is happening with the now Candyman and how it's being used and how it is wanting to be, or how someone wants it to be used. Which is, okay. So it's a little on the nose in that bit. Once it gets to the end, where and Candyman is going to do this, and I was just like, "Wow, that's a pretty bold statement and pretty blunt statement for what this individual hopes for Candyman." And then, but again, it's Jordan Peele, so you get all these layers of social consciousness. But because he didn't direct it, a lot of the subtlety and nuance that he brings is not there. This is a very not subtle piece.
No, it's not. Yeah, I would agree with that to a certain extent. But I would also say that I think that could be that's not necessarily a flaw. I think that, and maybe I'm giving credit where, you know, but where it's not due, but I think that was a choice rather than, and whether or not that was a good choice is debatable. But I think that this film was never going to be subtle in a lot of ways.
No, well, I mean, a lot of it, I mean, it goes along as, you know, it kind of maintains the original mythos, but, you know, like I said, we learn about the expansion of it again, and it kind of makes sense. It just, as it gets toward the end, as it builds, like I said, it just becomes very not subtle at all. And then it becomes, what is the word I want? I want to use a correct, I don't want to use an incorrect word. How about that? It becomes very blunt and blatant in its goal. However, but then at the end of the credits, if you stay all the way to the end of the credits, there's a little title card. And I don't know if you stayed that long, but here, my problem is not with the film and it is not with all the social commentary contained therein, whether you agree with the degree to which it develops by the end. My problem is that when you get to the end of the credits and you see the card that says, quote, "To learn more about resources and organizations that support racial justice and healing, please visit www.candymanmovie.com/impact. And I'm like, that kind of belies the virulence of who turns out to be our protagonists.
Well, I mean,
you know what I mean?
I kind of think that for me, the overall theme of the, or at least the main thing about the film that it's trying to express is that often it's the victim, not the perpetrator, but the victim that is forced to carry the burden of trauma through generation to generation to generation. So I think that the message at the end isn't, I mean, I get where you're coming from, but I think that this is, you know, it, to me, the film was more just about we need to, in a sense of needing to redefine what scares us to a certain degree, or redefine what weighs us down.
Well, and like I said, I didn't necessarily mind the end of the film. Like I said, it's like sometimes you say the victim has to bear the cost of the trauma as opposed to the perpetrator, or vice versa, or yeah, the society does. And, you know, just take that a step farther. Sometimes it's the victim is what draws attention to a problem, not a situation. So if someone gets hit by a drunk driver, everyone goes, "Oh, people really shouldn't drive drunk." But, like, you know, the president's daughter gets run over by a drunk driver. Suddenly now it's like, well, what the hell is going on? So the end of the film, you kind of get, well, if all these gentrifiers are somehow suddenly subjected to the trauma that Candyman inflicts, even though he's not there. Mythos.
I would almost say that is wishful thinking. I don't know how that movie would work, and that's there, but I don't.
Well, I'm trying to say I understand if that's what they were trying to say at the end, yeah. but then you turn that around. Like I said, I just can't square that with that title card at the end.
Sure. Well,
because the movie, like I said, I enjoyed the movie all the way through. Even to get to the end, you're like, oh, you know, it's not as subtle as a Jordan Peele. But it's you know, it's still in there in the points that he's trying to make in his other films. And I totally get it. And I totally appreciated it. And I just got to the end. I'm like, that is incongruous in my brain.
I would argue that.
Please do.
Well, I think, you know, it goes back to the nature of the boogeyman. Why does the boogeyman exist? And usually, I mean, you know, traditionally the boogeyman exists to keep us on course to, you know, be good people and not go off and do terrible things. But
right.
Yeah. It's the story that parents tell their kids so their kids won't sneak out at night.
Yep.
Because you'll get, you know, the man with the hook will come and get you. But I mean, for me, I think that there is a desire to maybe take the anger of what this boogeyman has become. I don't know if this continues but to me, it doesn't feel like, you know, the next film could be them trying to use their boogeyman to have some sort of justified revenge. But to me, it all ends in, we just got to let the boogeyman go.
Which ironically, at the beginning of this film, the boogeyman was gone. But he's,
to a certain extent, yes.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But so, and then he's brought back.
And the thing that actually, I mean, and this is one thing that I actually think is pretty brilliant about this, because the people who bring back the boogeyman are people who don't believe in him.
Oh, yeah.
That they didn't believe that he ever existed, who have no reverence, I guess, for the boogeyman.
Well, again, with Candyman or Bloody Mary or whatever, it's not that maybe something didn't happen with an individual in the past. It's like nobody believes in the supernatural aspect of it. So, yeah, it's not that they don't necessarily believe in, they don't believe in the mythos. They may believe or understand that it's based in something. But, yeah, they don't believe in the mythos. The problem is that in these films, the mythos is real. Don't read from the book.
Yeah, they have no respect for the boogeyman, I guess, or no reverence. And I mean, there's lots of stuff in this film that I thought was interesting. I mean, I don't want to talk about a lot of it because it gives stuff away.
I know, right?
And it's not like this movie is filled with lots of twists, but it is a movie where I think you learn as it goes along. It's not like, you know, a lot of slasher films, the characters will get just enough development to give them a reason to exist, I guess.
Right.
Whereas I think this one layers on top of that a little bit more, because it's not Freddy's Freddy because Freddy was a terrible person to begin with.
Right.
Jason is Jason because he was picked on and, you know, or whatever. But a lot of that gets lost in the second or third film. So it's kind of interesting that this, you know, being the fourth film, is a story that really fleshes out, rather than skinning, I suppose, but fleshes out the monster as it is and you start to realize kind of what the purpose of this monster is and what it's turned into, and you know, it's more of a legitimate folktale and an urban legend rather than just, you know, the Freddy haunts you in your dreams. And this is got a little more substance to it, and I think that the fact that it feels like a real folktale.
Yeah,
you can't really pick it apart. I mean, some of it seems a little fantastic and whatnot, but you know, and over the top. But a lot of urban legend are, and I think there's just something grounded about this that makes it just that much more effective.
I totally get it. And lest people have been listening and are angry at me for some reason, let me just. reiterate that it is a really nice adaptation, update, expansion of that original film. The idea of, they call it the swarm of Candyman being passed from generation to generation is great.
I think it's a horror concept that seems very obvious, but hasn't really ever been done.
I mean, stop and think. Fear Street kind of did.
Sure.
But I also like, you know, the,
but yeah, it's a very contemporary thing, which is just kind of, it is interesting.
Yeah. I also, you know, the discussion of the evolution from ghettofication to gentrification, because that's not just a Chicago phenomena.
No,
it happens in New York, happens in any big, and it has, you know, but that's a valid discussion to have. I did find unusual, the assertion that art and artists were used as like the vector for gentrification. It's kind of touched on really quick and then they veer away from it. But if you're paying attention and you catch it, and then you can think about that for a while about how, you know, that happens, you know, they, you know, as they're trying to de-ghetto an area, they'll invite the artistic types or whatever. And then, you know, then we'll build up around that.
Sure.
And it becomes gentrified. So it's really quick. It's almost blink and you miss it, but it's a really solid kind of vector to talk about for that. And I found that cool.
Cause you invite, a particular group of people, in this case, artists, to come live in an area that, you know, they build an area for these artists to live that's affordable for them at that time. And that's what attracts the artists there in the hopes that they can kind of change the community a little bit. You know, evolve it, I guess, is, but you see it a lot. But yeah, it's absolutely there. And you see it happen that's why cities have art space.
Right.
And then the art space becomes this hip area. So other people want to live in that area. You know, it's almost, yeah, it's part of the kind of a strange cycle.
Yeah. So
secular.
Yeah. And so it's just really weird. But that more attention wasn't paid to it. But like I said, okay. So no, but like I said, I don't want people to think that I didn't like the movie, because I did like the movie. Like I said, I didn't like its lack of subtlety and nuance that we get from Jordan Peele, and I didn't like it, that incongruity with the credits. But no, the movie's great. And if you just want to watch it as a sequel to the original, you should be okay with that.
Yeah.
So, it opens today. It's directed by, Naya DaCosta, who was going to be directing the next Captain Marvel film, The Marvels. As well. She did a good job in making a horror type slasher flick. I have some issues with it, but now overall I found it to be a very enjoyable entry in the horror genre.
Yeah. It's still very much a horror film.
Oh, definitely. It's still very much a horror film. And if that's all you want, just go in and watch it for blood and guts.
Or if that turns you off, because is the possibility too that it might?
That might. Sure.
I think with Get Out's a different kind of horror film. Us was a different kind of horror film than when this. Otherwise, this is closer to Us. But this is more of a traditional violent horror film that just happens to have some really interesting layers to it.
Yep.
If you're a horror fan, I think you'll love it. If you're interested in horror films that are kind of pushing the envelope in the thematic sense, I think this does that. Or if you're just looking for a slasher, it does that too.
Yep. So it just depends on how you want to watch it. But yeah, so I would tell people to watch it. I mean, if horror is in your bailiwick, go see Candyman. I wouldn't tell anyone not to see it. So I'll be interested to see what it does box office and actual reviews, because I haven't looked, because you know I try not to.
Yeah.
Because critics are dicks.
No, they can be. But I mean, I generally speaking, it's like a 7 out of 10. But for a slasher film, that's really quite good.
That's, I think, pretty close to where I was. Yeah, yeah, I had it at a 7 out of 10.
So, I mean, that's really, you know, and the ideas are, frankly, the ideas are probably a 9 or a 10 out of 10. It's just what they're packaged in necessarily hits a glass ceiling, I think, at some point.
Yeah.
To a certain extent. But
yep. I concur. So that is it for Candyman, everyone. It opens today. Check it out. Ryan is, for some reason about 3.5 hours south of where he normally is. I hope you're seeing Shakespeare.
I am seeing Shakespeare.
Oh, outstanding. I was down there. Hopefully they can actually do outdoor theater again without the smoke. Which we got dinged on. Tomorrow I am flying to Colorado Springs to attend the Colorado Springs Comic Con. I will probably make some Twitter posts on that just because we love cons, and ours is coming up 3 weeks from today.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
I know. And we're looking forward to that. So everyone take it easy. Ryan, enjoy Shakespeare. Until we get back to everyone, we've got some more films coming out, but until we get to those, don't forget to like us, follow us on social media at BS Movie Podcast. You know all that. It's on the website. Just do it. Help us out. We love you for it. Till next time, I'm Mark. That's Ryan. Bye, Ryan.
See you guys. See ya.
Bye-bye.